This is a recording of the State Water Plan hearings on January 30th at Burley, 7 p.m.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gene Gray. I'm chairman of the Idaho Water Resource Board. And we'd like to welcome all you newcomers and all you recaps. Good to see everybody here. With me tonight is Don Kramer, board member. Don is a farmer in the Castle Ford area. Dave Rydolph. Dave's a farmer in the St. Anthony area and also a member of Committee 9. And Jim Schauber from Eden. Jim farms over in Eden. We have Wayne Hawes from the Department of Water Resources. We have the director of the Department of Water Resources, Ken Dunn. And Frank Sherman, hydrologist for the Department of Water Resources. And we're here tonight to talk to you about revisions of Policy 32 of the Idaho State Water Plan. The function of the Idaho Water Resource Board is to develop water policy and keep the Idaho State Water Plan up to date. So what we'll be talking to you about tonight is revisions to the existing Policy 32, which is in the State Water Plan. If everyone has a copy of the current, you might take a look at page 2 and page 3. Page 2 and page 3 deals with the revisions of Policy 32 of the Water Plan. Pages 4 through 7 deal with the legislative package, which I'm sure you've all heard about. Policy 32 is kind of the kingpin that goes into the implementation of the legislative package. And it's your public input that we're seeking. When we put the final touches of Policy 32, we will then give it to the legislature. The legislature will have a final overview on anything that you've had to say through your board us. If you look at page 7 on the right-hand side, you see the things that are supposed to occur by May 15th for implementation of the entire package. Let's just kind of read down through those. Number one is the state water plan is to be amended. That's why we're before you tonight, is to get your input for the amending of Policy 32 of the state water plan. Secondly, the legislative package is to be passed. Thirdly, the appropriate action by the PUC, commission, or legislature as called for in the agreement, that is from page 4 to page 7, is to be taken. Four, there should be an appropriate order from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is acceptable to all parties. Five, the Idaho PUC must dismiss the 1977 lawsuit petitioned by the Idaho ratepayers. And if applicable, the Oregon PUC must also approve the package. And lastly, enactment of the legislature of subordination language is set forth in Exhibits 7A and 7B. And those are also found on page 4 through page 7 of the currents. What we'll do tonight is we'll have our state hydrologist, or our department hydrologist, introduce yourself, Frank. Mr. Sherman will give you an overview of Policy 32. The suggested changes that we're bringing before you. After that, we will have public input. We'll then close the formal meeting for the public input and have a question and answer session. Mr. Sherman, introduce yourself.
I'm a geologist.
Ooh, geologist.
Current state water plan that is in effect, first adopted in 1976, parts that relate to the Snake River Basin, Policy 32, basically unchanged when it was readopted in 1982. The text you have on pages 2 and 3 of the current newsletter contains everything that will be part of the policies directed towards the Snake River Basin. Some of those policies are really the same things that already appear in the existing state water plan. I'll skim through all of them very quickly and tell you which ones are changes and why or how they're changed, and just if somebody will just say it's existing language, basically. What we tried to do is take everything that was in the old policy, highlight it where it's really a policy decision or a statement by the board. Now, why are we changing the Policy 32 at this time? Clearly because the agreement that the governor and Idaho Power Company entered into called for changes. They specified certain changes that they wanted the board to make. If the board can't make those changes in good faith, it is conceivable that the agreement would fall through. one other reason that I like to cite for changing the water plan now, even though it'll be up for readoption in 2 years, is that the policy as it exists today allocates water to specific uses in the basin. Those allocations were based on the assumption that the river flow could go down to 3,300 CFS. That existing state water plan for the Snake River Basin says the minimum flow at the Murphy Gauge below Swan Falls shall be 3,300 CFS year round. That went in because at that time we thought we could take Idaho Power's water right down below as we wanted to, and it was subordinated. Idaho Supreme Court has said it's not subordinated. There's a question about how far we could take it down under this current plan. So the very first statement, it's really the management criteria for the whole basin, is that the policy of the state shall be that the flow at the Murphy Gauge during the irrigation season shall be 3,900 CFS. During the non-irrigation season, it shall be 5,600 CFS. This is a change both in the fact that we're raising the flow, raising the minimum flow established to that point, and we're splitting it between irrigation and non-irrigation season. Certainly not precedent setting in that most water rights have a time of use associated with it. Because there's so much water going past the Murphy Gauge in the wintertime, and particularly in the spring, it was felt that the difference between the historic minimum flow of 4,500 CFS and whatever the water from the state were trying to negotiate about, the difference between that and, say, 33 or 39, the difference between the wintertime flows were sometimes tens of thousands of CFS, 12,000, 15,000, 17,000 CFS. We could afford to raise it a little bit more in the wintertime. So we've split the season on the minimum flow as well as raising it. You'll note that in this particular policy, it talks about zero flow at Milner Dam. That's in the current water plan, just a continuation of that. It talks about a flow at Weezer of 4,750 CFS. That's in the current water plan. We're also adding, or proposed to add, flows for Johnson's Bar and Lion Point. These are two places in the river below the Hells Canyon complex. These flows are actually specified in the federal license that Idaho Power has to operate the Hells Canyon complex. In the water plan today, it says these flows are recognized as a valuable resource and it actually lists that part of the license that we repeat it again, saying the board thinks that's a good idea. The intent here is to make it actually state policy that those flows should be maintained. What it does is guarantees those flows in case the license, the operational license at Hells Canyon complex would ever be changed. That's basically policy 32 as it states here, and that's the criteria that says how you got to manage the rest of the river. Now policy 32A, water held in trust by the state. It's a new concept, and the language is very brief here for several reasons. Particularly, we're citing things that the legislature is supposed to do. You've got an existing plan, we've got proposed revisions, we've got things that the legislature is supposed to accomplish by May 15th. There's a policy of Idaho that water held in trust by the state pursuant to Idaho Code 42-203B, and that's the piece of code that reflects the compromise agreement in Idaho Power giving up part of their water line. Be reallocated to new uses in accordance with the criteria established by Idaho Code 42-203A, those are the existing criteria that the department uses in the annual water right, beneficial use non-speculative, and 42-203C. The water that's being held in trust by the state is that water that Idaho Power had claimed and they are now, through the agreement, relinquishing the use of. They're giving that water to. That water is being held in trust. We always use the Swan Falls example because that's where the lawsuit started. That's where the minimum flows are critical. And at Swan Falls, Idaho Power claimed 8,400 CFS. They actually claim more than that, but they only include beneficial use of 8,400 CFS. The water plan called for 3,300 CFS. Historic daily low had been 4,500 CFS. In a compromise agreement, state agreed to set the flow at 3,900 CFS in the summertime. Idaho Power would not protest any existing user as long as 3,900 CFS were going to pay that gauge during the summertime period. The difference between whatever Idaho Power claimed and this minimum flow is being held by the state to be used for other purposes. Now, because that water had been appropriated, the Supreme Court recognized the valid claims of some portion of it. The state does not have to give it out as they would the unappropriated water to the state. We all know that the right of the citizen to appropriate the unappropriated water shall never be denied. This water is water that has already been appropriated, and it's being given back to the state so the state can reallocate it. Idaho Power can continue to use it until somebody else starts to use it. Idaho Power won't protest anybody else using that water as long as it meets existing state law. Part of the deal was they're going to put some extra hoops to go through before you can get that water to use. And those are shown in the back of the agreement. I forget which exhibit number it is. It was called public interest at one time. It's basically a checkoff list that the department or someone has to go through and say, this is good for the economy of the state. This impacts the hydropower base, good or bad. It's family farm tradition. Once they meet existing criteria, new proposed criteria, then the director can allocate that to the personal water line. Policy 32B, domestic, commercial, municipal, and industrial. The water plan today talks about allocating the volume of water for municipal and industrial uses. Negotiators who put the agreement together to convert from CFS, if you convert the allocation that's in the water plan from municipal and industrial, it comes down to about 144 CFS. By including domestic users, it was felt appropriate perhaps to raise that to a nice even number like 150 CFS. Now, adding a lot of domestic users to the DCMI, as we tend to refer to it, is not particularly important in that domestic users in terms of consumption really consume a very small part of the water. If you take today, there are about 400 CFS diverted on an average day for domestic, commercial, and industrial uses in the basin. You stop and think about where the water is actually used up. It comes down, most of it gets used up for watering lawns and communities. Most of the industries in the basin are not particularly water consumptive. They wash the pavement, the water goes back to the river, or it goes to the seepage line, soaks into the ground, recharges the groundwater. We're not consuming much of that. So 150 seems like a reasonable number to set aside out of this block of new water the state has to allocate to new uses. The other thing that's important to remember about this one is that the state water plan does get reviewed and updated every 5 years. If this number is a bad guess, and it's a bad guess, it can be changed in the future. Policy 32C, agriculture. Policy of the state, according to this, would be that you set aside out of this water we have now to manage, you set aside some for domestic, commercial, municipal, and industrial. You want the rest to go to agriculture. But because it's this water that's already been claimed by Idaho Power and being relinquished to the state, it will have to go through the same set of criteria. Family farm tradition, in fact, and how the power benefit the state of the farms and the rest. In the existing water plan, the plan specifies that they would like to see so much minimum new agricultural development. That, of course, was based on Dragon River down to 3,300 CFS. What these proposed language would do is say that while water is available, encourage its use for that purpose, would not like to see more than 80,000 acres in any four-year period of new lands come into development. It acts as a constraint, of course it's not a major constraint right now. If you look over the records for the last 8 years, 10 years or so, you find the average new grounds coming in of only like 17,000 acres per year. So 80,000 acres in a four-year period is roughly what's going to happen in the last few years. Probably something we can live with and unless the agricultural economy turns around and about it, and we'll never have to worry about the 80,000 being the top figure. Policy 32D is hydropower. It says that the policy of Idaho shall be that hydropower use to be recognized as beneficial use of water. That's already the case, actually. It goes on to say that depletion of flows below the minimum average daily flow set forth in policy 32 is not in the public interest. We all realize and recognize that the agreement per se is a compromise. For Idaho Power to agree to relinquish certain of their claims, the state agreed that the minimum flow set by the water plan would be a firm flow, and any depletion below that flow would not be in the public interest. Idaho Power is therefore assured of at least 3,900 CFS of the river. Now, one asked why everything is peaked to Swan Falls, and I said earlier that was the thrust of the court case. In reality, of course, Idaho Power has a different claim water right at every one of their dams up the district. As part of the agreement, they have said, as long as the 3,900 goes past Murphy, we will not take action or ask for our claim rights at any of the other structures. So the 3,900 is really important. In terms of diversion from any particular reach of the river, the state may, in actuality, have more water held in trust than the difference between 8,400 and 3,900. The key point is that Murphy, as long as the state gets 3,900 CFS going past Murphy, Idaho Power will not object to not receiving the right in any of their other dams on the system. Policy 32E, navigation. This is basically the same language that's in the water plan. The policy of Idaho shall be that water sufficient for commercial and recreation navigation is provided by the minimum flows in the Skank River. The commercial navigation they're referring to here is basically that which takes place below the Hell's Canyon complex by people running through Hell's Canyon itself. If 3,300 was a target value, by raising it to 39, the board feels that there's going to be enough water in the river for recreation purposes. Aquaculture. This really contains two policies. One, the first part of the policy of Idaho shall be that water necessary to process aquaculture products be taken from the DCMI to draw the water. The person wants to wash and prepare fish for market or whatever, that's a commercial venture. If someone wants to apply for a water right for that purpose, it should come out of a domestic commercial. Second part is a little more complicated, but it's actually in the existing water plan. It states that the minimum flows provided at the Murphy Gauging Station should provide an adequate water supply for agriculture. However, it is recognized that it may be necessary to construct different diversion facilities than presently exist. A good portion of trout farmers in the state rely on spring flows in the Hagen Creek, Thousand Springs area. With a zero flow set for Milmer Dam during the summertime, conceivably, most of the water in the river by the time it gets to Murphy Gauge is going to be water that came out of Thousand Springs. We have to keep 3,900 going down there for the Murphy Gauge. There's going to be a fair block of water coming out of Thousand Springs. However, a water right does not necessarily guarantee a citizen an easy diversion. It allows you to use the water of the state at that location. Conceivably, if the spring flows continue to decrease as they have for the past 30 years, a trout farmer, for example, might have to change the diversion structure. Worst case situation, you might have to go well. His priority date, his water right would be unchanged, but his means of diversion might have to change. As I say, this appears at this time fairly unlikely because of the requirement for the 3,900 CFS. Policy 32G, fish, wildlife, and recreation. It is the policy of the state that the minimum flows are sufficient and necessary to meet the minimum requirements for aquatic life, wildlife, to provide water for recreation and state for the Bowdoin Dam. When the state water plan was originally adopted in 1976, that cost us a real sticking point about the minimum flow steps as of the gauge. Balance future developmental uses versus fishery and wildlife situation. The time in 76, the board finally, I guess, compromised on 3300 and acknowledged that that is not the optimum flow of the fish and wildlife, even for recreation. I think the negotiators and the board both feel that by raising the minimum flow of water from helping those values out, they would, board would still not find that these are optimum values. They're better than what the water plan has now, and they will protect those kind of resources to some degree. Policy 32H, water quality and pollution control. In a state where we have real concerns about the quantity available of water available to the citizens, it doesn't seem like a good idea that you could take good water to mix it with bad water so somebody can get rid of this wastewater. The board feels that there are enough state and federal environmental laws on the books, or that appear to be coming on the books, that water quality should not be a major problem in the state. It can be regulated and reduced in laws. They do not feel it's a beneficial use of water when you take good water and mix it with bad so somebody can use a law. There would be a better way to handle Policy 32I, new storage. There are two policies incorporated in what basically is one policy here. Fairly complicated. They're required by the agreement. The Water Board has already received conflicting testimony about this particular policy. Let's go with the very first part of it. It is a policy of Idaho that maximum use must be made of the existing storage facilities in the basin. New storage upstream from the Murphy Gauge should only be approved after it is determined that, insofar as possible, maximum use of existing storage is being made. The intent is that that determination would be made by the Director of the Department of Water Resources. Why have this policy in? I think the real reason is we're claimed to be and are in fact at a position in the Snake River Basin where we can't beat Idaho Falls water. It's a legitimate claim that's been on the books for years and we can't beat it. If we're so water short, we should be making the best use we can out of the water that's in the system. Now we all know that, you know, most years, October 1st, the flow over Miller Dam increases dramatically. This happened to be a good wet year, so it went up to 12,000 CFS past Miller Dam on October 1st. That's because the water master has to make space for next year's runoff. There are waters up there that sit in the reservoirs that could be used in theory, but are not. Why aren't they? There are really some legal and social barriers using that water. The negotiators asked the board to put this in the water plan and asked the board to accept the responsibility to ask the questions. Is there a way we can make better use of our water? I think under the laws and rules and regulations that are in place today, the director would find that we can't do much else. There are some unallocated waters in Ryan are available, but once that water is taken up, there's not that large block. There really isn't much more water in the system that's not allocated. Then why is it the excess most years? It's because a man who has water behind the federal reservoir cannot sell that water at a profit. State has a water bank, has rules and regulations to move water around between seller and buyer. Committee of Nine uses it to some degree. But a person can't sell his water for a profit unless you call the sale. It's another reason. A person cannot sell or lease water from behind the Tioga Reservoir for more than 1 year at a time. If you wanted to go in and start some new kind of development, be it agriculture, industry, whatever, and you could only be assured of the water supply on a year-to-year basis, you wouldn't put much money in. I don't think any banks would back it either. So even though there's a lot of water up there, that sits there sometimes for year after year after year, remember a person can have a full flow right and a full stored right in the same piece of ground. An irrigator may not need that water 1 year in 10, 1 year in 20. The city of Pocatello has water in storage for an emergency situation or a dramatic increase in population in Pocatello. Right now, if they called for that water, they'd have to have pumps in the river to try and catch it as it went by. There's no physical way for them to get that water. But they own water that they've never called. There are barriers that the state puts up to more efficient use of this water. If you don't use your water once in 5 years, you could lose it. If you have water and beneficial use is irrigation on a piece of property, you can't sell that water to another consumptive user, because that's an expansion of water. The only way you can sell that water off is to reduce the amount of water you use for improving beneficial use. Certainly, it's a big social barrier. These one-year restrictions tend to protect the agricultural interest in the area, because no commercial runner can come in and buy that water out on one-year basis. And if you want to protect the agriculture economy and the basis, portion of the state, and maybe that's a good idea. So that's a social barrier to the more efficient use of the water. What the board has agreed to do is try and ask your reclamation, congressional delegation, some of the key state people, can these laws be changed so that on October 1st, a big rush of water doesn't go down the river when we can shut the water in the summertime, and that people that wanted water could get it. As I said earlier, if the director had to make a determination right or not right away, he'd probably have to say we're doing the best we can under the existing rules and regulations of the laws. If we can't change those laws, then that's still going to be a determination, sure. The second part of this proposal, proposed policy, applies only to the reach of river below Milner Dam and above the Murphy Gate. As part of the trading off back and forth between the state and Idaho Power, Idaho Power wanted to protect their winter operations system and schedule. It's key to Idaho Power. Plenty of demand for power on the west coast in the wintertime because there's so much electric heating going on. Nights like tonight are going to put a load on Idaho Power for electric heating in Idaho. And they tend, during the wintertime, of course, to fill Brown Lake Reservoir, the only storage reservoir in the West Coast complex. So they wanted to assure themselves a continued flow during the non-irrigation season. The policy reads, approval of new storage projects that would divert water from the main stem of the Snake River between Milner and Murphy during the period of November 1 to March 31st should be coupled with provisions that mitigate the impact such depletions would have on the generation of hydropower. Texas tries to explain it. Can't go very far for several reasons. Principally, the negotiators who put the agreement together couldn't agree on the mitigation question. They did agree that the word mitigation should be used. Mitigation meaning lessening the adverse impact, not necessarily compensating either power, dollar for dollar or volume of water for volume of water. They left this open to the board to resolve at some future date. I guess if the agreement comes into place, the first project the director has that he's ready to take to the board for guidance on mitigation, they'll have to do something. Clearly, if you're going to talk about the adverse effect on Idaho Power's operation, so you're going to have to look at each project as an individual project. Depends on the volume of water, the timing of the diversion, timing of the return flows, if there are return. It's going to be a very complicated procedure, and it's going to go project by project, and there will never probably be anything more than a broad set of guidelines. But anybody who wants to divert water from that reach of river during the wintertime for storage purposes shall have to come to an agreement in terms of mitigation for other power. Someone asked a question today and asked for a simple description. I said you'll have the director of the Department of Water Resources in the ring with the applicant and Idaho Power, and you'll have the Water Board acting as the judges of ringside. Hopefully it won't be that bad, but it could do. Very last policy, stored water for management purposes. If there are at this date unallocated waters in the system, and if the Department of Water Resources is supposed to manage this whole system down to average daily flow at one point of a certain magic number that varies from summer to winter, I don't think we can do it. Okay, well, we can do it if we're very, very conservative and we hold on to all the water that's in the basin and we don't issue very many new permits. We can always be on the safe side. If we intend to be even partway liberal and start issuing rights, particularly on the Snake Plant Act. Now remember, zero flow at Miller, possible, and sometimes occurs during the summertime. All the water in the river is made up of fountain springs that shut from year to year. So the director has to look at the river flow and river rights, and he has to look at the aquifer, how many new applications and how much groundwater is being drawn from out there, and try and balance those so he never goes below 3,900. If he were to go below 3,900, no one who is in place and can prove beneficial use by the signing of the agreement, October 84, Idaho Power cannot issue a call for water against them, but Idaho Power can issue a call for anybody who gets a water right after that day, or proves their beneficial use after that day. Well, we all know that if a guy's pumping a well 30 or 50 miles from Fountain Springs, if the director goes and shuts him off, he isn't gaining very much at Fountain Springs, and won't be able to see it. The actual impact might not come till wintertime. Yet he can't shut off the junior river man and not shut off the junior groundwater pumper. Or it's not more fair or something. So what the board is suggesting here is that the state acquire some water. So when the department gets down close to 3,900, if they make a mistake, they can cover it by calling for some water that they already own in the river. Now that water wouldn't have to sit there idly year after year. It could be put through the water bank, could possibly be sold by Idaho Power or some other non-profit. But it would be nice to have it there when we get down to the 3,900 number. And the department says, we screwed up, quite honestly, we've issued too many permits on the island, and we can't get that water to the river because state law is going to say you have to get it there. In Colorado, they operate under a system that I think we're going to see more and more, something going to happen in Idaho, and that's called injunctive use. And when a junior groundwater person acquires the right to pump groundwater in that area, he has to guarantee that he has a surface water available that can be called on if the river flows go below a certain number. Now, if we wait until we get to that kind of situation here in Idaho, and this unallocated water is already gone, it's going to be very hard for the individual groundwater pumper to come in and acquire some kind of insurance to cover up for his negative impact in spring. The state has a big block of water. Take the least amount of water in small chunks. So the board is recommending that through some mechanism the state acquire some water so that we don't have to be ultra conservative in issuing water rights.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. We'll now take public testimony, and the board will first call Ray Goff. Ray, if you'd please come to the mic, state your name, address, and telephone number for the record, please.
Thank you. I'll wait. My name is Daryl Andrew.
record to show Mr. Goff waves. Board will call Bill McManus. Bill, please give us your name, address, and phone number.
Supposed to talk to this table here. Maybe it's working, maybe it's not. Just speak up loud enough, everybody can hear. I'm Bill McManus. I'm in Route 1 in Rupert. My phone is 436-3451. My first comment is in accordance with the adjudication. I'm speaking for myself and not as a member of the Minnetonka Irrigation District, as to which I'm a member of, newly a member of. The adjudication to me seems like something that everybody's going to have to be involved with. It's gone on for a longer period of time in the ground laying of it. It's been going on longer than I've been involved in the farming, so it's something that's been coming a long time. If anybody who's worried about their water right hasn't heard about it or doesn't understand it, they better get with it right away, because like it's been presented to me, all you have to do is go through some simple procedures and get yourself down as being known that you have X amount of acres of water coming to you and that you have a water right for however many acres primary. Maybe you've bought some since then that are at any time up until the adjudication takes place. If it's all made clear and on paper by March 1st of 85 or October of 85 or whenever it takes place, those people shouldn't have anything to worry about. And that seems to me to have something to do with Swan Falls, the way it falls in with the groundwater and new permits. Everybody, if they have taken care of it, it seems like that should go on. Just for my own use, I'm for it. And what I learned a couple weeks ago in Boise is just not that involved, and it's a small price for those who do have to come up with an amount of money, which seems to have been determined long before I was on the scene. As far as the Swan Falls, the number 4,500 or 4,600 acre feet, is that right? It continues to come up as being the lowest amount of water ever recorded, am I right?
CFS,
okay, and that's 50, 60, 70 years, basically. At 3,900 feet, you got 600 feet or better of leeway for anybody who doesn't look for conserving their water. From here on out, water's getting squeezed pretty tight. That's just going to be another thing to give everybody the initiative to work towards conserving that water. So even though we have 600 feet of barrier between 3,900 and 4,500, some people don't like that idea. I heard quite a bit of that in Boise. Everybody's opposed to going letting it come up from 3,300 to 3,900. It just, to me, it seems like there's nothing the matter with the way it's been proposed. I know I could probably get into a pretty good battle with some local water users over that, but if it's gone on for this long and it's never gone below 4,500, what's to worry about at 3,900? And like you say, there might, after the adjudication, be a few permits issued, a little here and a little there, and with all the things that you're looking at as far as extra water in storage, and if we can keep all our storage at 100%, I brought that up earlier. You know, some of our water we've lost at Jackson is down a little bit. That's for service water use, but eventually that's water that's in the whole upper Snake River area. So as long as all those waters are up, 3,900 feet to me seems like a good figure. It's really all I wanted to state.
Bill, let's see if we have any questions for the board. Mr. Kramer? And Mr. Rado. Thank you.
Did Frank have anything? He kind of looked at me like maybe I had something I missed there.
We'll get our testimony over and get into some questions and answers. Is there anyone else who would like to testify at this time? If not, we'll close the public testimony portion. I'd like to, you might make note that the board will receive written testimony until February 22nd. And that can be sent to the Resource Board of the State House, Boise, Idaho, 83720. So we'll now open it up for questions. Yes, sir.
You may have answered this before we came, but what was the main reason for raising it from 33 to 39?
That's a long, drawn-out answer if you really start at the beginning. I guess that's the best way to do it. As you know, the Supreme Court of Idaho said that Idaho Power Company had an unsubordinated right at Swan Falls, and they sent back to the district court the question of how much that water right amounted to. Idaho Power had claimed 8,400, or they claimed more than that. The court ruled that their claim of 8,400 was legitimate. But they had not been receiving that for a number of years in summertime. They sent back to the district court the question of what their water right actually was. The state was prepared to nearly re-argue the whole question. Felt that subordination had, the whole issue of subordination had totally been resolved because of the very narrow view that the Supreme Court took of the agreement, the language of the original agreement between the state and the power. The state also felt that they had a legitimate argument that they had a constitutional right to regulate the river for hydropower purposes. It's not clear what that exactly means. I think most people felt that they could cut the flow down the river if they wanted. They didn't have to worry about its impact on hydrocarbons. So it looked like we were going to go back to court and start over the whole darn process and try and decide how much water Idaho Power was really entitled to in the river. And the Senate passed a bill called Senate Bill 1180, which allowed the governor to enter into an agreement with Idaho Power that was designed to release or protect those people who were existing users. And when he said, let's negotiate this part of the deal at least, Idaho Power and the governor decided, let's do the whole thing, see if we can get a compromise. So they looked at the state water plan, which said, if the state had won their case and Idaho Power's water right was really reduced in some fashion to 3,300, that was going to be the flow in the river. They looked at the historic flow of 4,500, which would probably have been the flow if I were probably one, totally, nearly totally victory. And said, okay, we've got two numbers, 4,500 and 33. Let's just split in half. That's actually what we do. It's a 1,200 CFS difference between what the historic low flow has been and what the state water plan called. And we split in half. That may have been a starting point, or that may have been an ending point, because no one in this room was actually a party sitting on the negotiation. It certainly represents a compromise on both sides. Idaho Power is giving up. Many people would think that Idaho Power could at least have won the amount of water they had been receiving. So it was a compromise, and it was a 50-50 split compromise. But in order to stick with that, each side gave up something which is something all over again. The other thing, besides starting a court case all over again, which could have been another 5 or 10 years, the Department of Water Resources had declared a moratorium on issuing any new permits in the basin above Swan Falls until this question was resolved, because the department was caught in the same awkward situation that the Power was. If they had to go back and try and somehow find water for Idaho Power's claim of 8,400 CFS, the department was in the water. And the cooling man had to shut off and not do it. So the department said, clearly we can't be going around issuing new permits until this thing is solved. And if it took 5 or 10 years, that was another 5 or 10 years. Nobody in the basin